is the biggest show. It's the one that's really capturing imagination.
But I think more than that is the people of Emporia coming out to support us all the way.
The event as a whole is just such a unique atmosphere. People from all over the county, country, world converge into one community.
We cannot wait to be back in Emporia.
Hello and welcome to the Funbound Gravel Podcast, where we discuss how fun is fast and fast is fun, especially at Unbound Gravel.
I'm your host, Kristen Legan.
And I'm Nick Legan.
Now let's talk gravel.
Everyone, today we have Sean Thurman. He's new in his role as the race director for Unbound Gravel, Big Sugar, and the Little Sugar mountain bike race. He comes from Medalist Sports. We'll get into that a little bit, where he worked as a technical director. He's a father, a cyclist, and a passionate advocate for growing the sport. Welcome to the podcast, Sean.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Super excited to be here and talk Funbound.
Right on. Well, we want to chat today about the course, of course. That's being released later this week, so we're hoping to give our listeners a little bit of a sneak peek into what they can expect when they're in Emporia in a few weeks' time. But first, let's get to know you a little bit more and your new role at Lifetime. So I'll just kick off with the easy one. Where is home for you and your family?
So currently I am based in St. Louis, Missouri. Been here pretty much all my life. It's the one place I've never actually planned a cycling event. You know, we're looking to make a couple of moves over the next year or two. So I will probably land in Bentonville, but St. Louis is home for now.
Nice. Yeah. It seems like a lot of the Lifetime crew between Emporia and Bentonville, it's really starting to become a family, you know, home for a lot of the Unbound and Big Sugar, Little Sugar folks, moving around there. It's a great, great place for riding both places.
It really is. It's a big move for my family. Both boys ride. So, you know, we spend a lot of time down there now, nice. And they are super excited. So
nice. Well, will you tell us a little bit about your past work, especially with Medalist Sports and how, you know, what you've done through that side of things and how that's transitioning over into your new role here with Unbound and Lifetime?
Sure. So, you know, honestly, about 15 years ago, you know, I was kind of in that lull of like, you know, what do I want to be when I grow up, right? and I left a decent, you know, job and took a $9 an hour bike mechanic role at a local shop here in St. Louis. And it really kind of rolled from there. So, you know, I started as an event mechanic, you know, I kind of got into the multi-sport place with like neutral mechanic. And then I was introduced to Medalist Sports through driving the VIP car at US Pro Challenge. You know, and just kind of started the conversations there about what does it look like to be full-time with Medalist. And we laid out a plan and some training and jumped right in that first year with, you know, Tour of California. And then US Pro Challenge and Tour of Utah, and then a ton of cause events. So they did, you know, a ton of cancer related rides. Patrick Dempsey has a huge event in Maine. Yeah. So I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't know about Medalist is the cause involvement. So mm-hmm. that was pretty cool to be a part of. And then over those 10 years, we got into, you know, cyclocross world championships in Fayetteville. I was the mm-hmm. race director for that.
Oh, wow.
Going back to like Colorado Classic and things of that nature. 2015, we did Richmond Road Worlds. So, awesome. You know, there's a ton of history there with the racing aspect of it. And then, you know, the feel good stories come from the cause related pieces. So, and then most recently we have, where they have kind of taken on the USA Cycling National Championships. So the first Gravel Nats, I was one of the race directors for that as well.
Congratulations. Great. That was a successful national championships.
Yeah, I think it went really well. You know, for the first one, in the historic challenges of USAC.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think it went really well for what they were trying to do. So
moving on from that, what are you excited about in this new role with Lifetime then? You're taking on, you know, a big role. It's an important role. And you're, I would argue with Lifetime, you play a, in that race director role, you play a little bit more of a public persona as well compared to the medalist side where it's a little more behind the scenes.
Yeah, agree. Historically, we've, you know, stayed pretty much behind closed doors and nobody really knew, you know, who we were or what we were doing. So that is a big change for this role. The short answer is the potential. You know, I see a ton of potential to leave this industry better than what it's ever been. And I think Lifetime sits, you know, kind of in the driver's seat right now. From the gravel aspect, especially, you know, we can rewrite how cycling goes. We can look at what it is to be a pro gravel cyclist in North America. You know, we don't have to judge success off of being a pro road cyclist in Europe. So I think that's the biggest attribute here is just the potential in what they're doing, the yeah. support they have. It's a huge opportunity to be a part of that.
Yeah, I would argue that, you know, what they've already done with building and growing Unbound, building and growing the Lifetime Grand Prix now in season three, they are rewriting and they are leading globally what it looks like, what the potential is to be not only an amateur or a participatory athlete taking on a personal challenge, but also at the elite level, which is really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's been huge. It's huge for the industry. It's huge for the sport. Yeah. It's, you know, gravel cycling is kind of that, you know, it's that touch point for everyone. You know, the barrier of entry is pretty minimal. It's friendly for everyone. It's not intimidating, like riding on the road in the middle of, you know, a larger city or something. So, you know, ultimately, you know, and we've talked about Unbound before, but it, you know, it's rooted in adventure. It's a journey, and whether it's you're at the front of the group or the last rider in, you know, this is your journey, and it's, we're kind of there to help you make it what you choose. So I think that's huge in this sport.
Well, it's also pretty cool with Lifetime being the leader and Unbound kind of paving the way or exploring the way that gravel can go. But there's still that room for all of the smaller races to kind of do it their own way still. And it doesn't have to be one way or the other. And I think that's something that's been really cool hearing from the Unbound crew along the way is just saying, you know, we're trying these different things, you know, with the different pro starts and different, you know, stuff like that, but allowing, you know, they're not trying to tell every race out there, like, you have to do it this way. This is just, you know, a potential. We're going to test it out. We're going to, you know, see what feedback we get. And sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's not, but they're kind of the ones that are putting themselves out there to try it out. And yeah, just keep pushing forward.
Yeah. And I truly believe there's room for all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we do things completely different than Mid-South, but we need both. You know,
right,
it's like, you know, we need the Bobby Wintles of the world. He's an amazing human.
Hallelujah.
So there's so much room for all of it that there's no reason to just focus on one piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what about yourself? You
first? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask the same question, I think. So in terms of your own riding and, you know, where does your background come from in terms of bikes? It sounds like your sons are mountain bikers, or are you gravel rider, mountain biker, all of the above?
So my preference is gravel. You know, obviously in St. Louis, we struggle a little bit. I have about an hour drive to get to anything, you know, sustainable. Right. So it's a lot of road stuff around here. That's kind of my background. Mountain biking, I can get to that a little bit sooner. So that's kind of what I do with the kids mostly. And a lot of the events around here, I'll do some cross country mountain biking, but I travel a ton for gravel events. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, the rule of threes, the Mid-South.
Nice.
You know, I try to go everywhere I can and ride gravel as much as possible.
Well, we haven't talked about it, but St. Louis has a huge road cycling and cycling culture. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest. I remember racing in the St. Louis area as a collegiate racer. And the racing was phenomenal. The road circuits, the Criterium, I mean, everything you guys have over the years. I mean, mega Criterium series.
Yeah, it's so much. You know, we just kind of hit like the Tuesday night world swing starting, I guess, a couple weeks ago. So, you know, right now you have the opportunity to race, you know, the weekly crit series on Tuesday. There's a time trial series on Wednesday. There's dirt crits on Thursday. And then every weekend there's a race within a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So it really is a pretty big market.
Well, okay, we've covered some of your background. Thanks for sharing. But let's get on to, I think, why people are real here. No offense, Sean. We're really loving getting to know you. But I think what people really want to get to know are these Unbound courses. So you just had the chance, I believe. So we're talking on a Wednesday. You drove the whole, I think you drove all the courses or the 200 course on Friday. And just as a reminder for everyone, Sean is brand new in this role. He's 3 weeks in. We want to be really kind to him here. And as he said, Unbound is about adventure. So we're not gonna spill the beans on everything here. You got to discover some of this in the moment. But
you haven't memorized 200 miles of the course yet. Come on, we need a mile by mile breakdown.
Actually,
it's gonna be a long podcast.
I have quite a bit there, but I'll save a lot of those details for you to see them yourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your initial thoughts though on on the North Course courses?
You know, so I think the big thing is, you know, everybody asks about mud. There's the historic mud piece there. I don't think we have as much to worry about as we go north. The big deciding factors on the north courses will be the historic headwind on your way back in. So, you know, that time of year, the wind is always out of the south. So the first half of the course, you're going to have a tailwind. You know, the opportunity is there to push your pace, and then, you know, you hit Allman, start turning back south, and then guess what? It's a headwind the whole way. so, you know, I think that's something people need to keep in mind. And then the heat, you know, you're pretty exposed. If we get into those 80s and 90s, you know, water is going to be a huge resource that you want to plan for. So,
Nick, you were kind of talking about why you think the North Course feels hotter or is hotter, and it had more to do like with the road surfaces.
Yeah, I mean, as you go north, the roads are whiter. I mean, the makeup of the road is a different color; it's a different shade. And to me, it always feels brighter and like it's reflecting more of the heat in your face, and your eyes are squinting more. I think all of the riding in that area tends to be pretty exposed, but the North Course, I know it goes through some creek crossings and there's some tree cover there, but I feel like you get a little more of that when you're south, you get a little more shade. So to me, the North Course, and I think my experience is the roads feel chunkier. The size of the gravel is larger in places. So for all these reasons, you know, you're squinting with the heat. It's just so bright. Your brain is inundated with light. The road is chunkier and there's no shade. It always just feels hotter to me up there. And it could be that, you know, we live in Colorado. We don't get heat. I mean, it snowed yesterday. You know, it's May 8th. So the North courses are hard. I mean, I think they're harder than the South courses, or at least maybe they are for me as an athlete. Sean, what are your thoughts? Sure. I mean, have you had a chance to ride Unbound courses much yourself?
So I didn't, I've ridden some of the South stuff, closer to Emporia. And then I did a few loops around like the Americas and Council Grove area. I would say it's much harder. It's much more technical. The descents are much more technical. I think you know, the North Course I would describe with, you know, like death by a thousand cuts. You don't have anything that's, you know, super sustained, long grinding climbs. It's just a bunch of short, punchy, chunky, you know, kind of nasty little climbs that over time are going to take a toll. And then, you know, you get to the top and you look down and it's this screaming descent with, you know, huge chunky rock. It feels like you're riding through a ball pit, you know?
Yeah. I remember a few,
climbing. I definitely think it's hard.
Absolutely. I remember climbing out of some, kind of creek bed, creek crossing stuff, where there was one particular like creek crossing, super chunky, kind of like maybe one line. You just get recovered from that to take a deep breath and you take a hard left and you're almost, I mean, I almost got off my bike. It was so steep and it was super short. Yeah. To your point, Sean, it wasn't, we're not talking a 1 mile climb even. We're not talking a half mile climb necessarily, but it's just so steep and you're barely moving to start with. So I think low gears and big tires.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where the elevation profile kind of plays tricks with you because nothing looks like a climb, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at it and it's, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, this flatter, friendly grade, but it's not, you know, driving it was like, wow.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Did you have any flats on the vehicle when you're out driving?
We didn't, you know,
oh, lucky.
I have to throw a plug in for the Mazda CX-50. you know, who knew it was quite the adventure vehicle. It held up really well. It was cool.
Well, and as an asterisk, Sean is already excelling in his job because Mazda is a sponsor of the Lifetime Grand Prix. So that's a great plug. So can you take us through briefly, you know, what can people in the 25, the 50, the 100, the 200, and the XL kind of expect? And I know that's a big question. You know, the 25 is a non-competitive. 50, I think that the 50 is non-competitive as well. Is that the case?
The 50 does have a competitive junior piece.
Oh, right.
But
okay.
Yes, overall, the 25 and the 50 are both non-competitive, and both kind of head the same direction. So they get to about the 5 mile point and they take off towards Americas. So kind of the way that all the other rides come back in, the 25 mile will go out to Americas and there's an aid station there. And then they kind of turn around and head back. The 50 mile will get to Americas and they have a little lollipop loop that they will see the aid station twice before coming back.
Great.
Both of those routes we will sign, which, you know, we don't do on any other route. Personally, I feel like that's, you know, again, back to like barrier of entry where, you know, the 25 mile riders matter. But I don't want to say you have to go out and buy this, you know, a computer to navigate. So let's make this as easy as possible for people to jump in, you know.
Is that new for this year for the 50 and the 25?
I think we've signed the 25 in the past. Okay. I'm not sure about the 50, but this year we're looking to sign both.
Nice. That's going to be great. I think people will be really happy about that. And yeah, just get to focus on the ride and not be too stressed about making wrong turns.
Yeah, I think that takes, you know, one whole aspect of the ride away. Like, you know, just enjoy your adventure and don't worry about being lost for an additional 20 miles.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So moving
it's
on.
It's hard then, enough.
Yes. Moving on then to the 100 and the 200. What are the towns that riders will visit for checkpoints there?
So the first one will come at about mile 40 is the water oasis in Eskridge. From there, honestly, like coming into Eskridge, you've got Call Reserve, which I know has kind of been an iconic piece of North routes in the past. And that's kind of where the first separation will take place on the 200 in particular. Right before Call Reserve is where the 100 mile will split.
Okay.
So I believe it's right at like mile 27. Mm-hmm. The 100 mile will split and kind of cut across towards Council Grove. Honestly, I think this is probably where, you know, the race aspect of the 200 really kicks off. Call Reserve is, as you guys know, is super narrow, technical, kind of the first big piece of the course. And then you get into Eskridge. That'll be your first water stop. Coming out of Eskridge is maybe the most technical piece of the entire day. And it's a combination of Sanford and Divide roads. It is punchy climbs, big rock, steep descents, kind of relentless. I think it's about a 4.5 mile section.
Oof, ouch.
That's it. You know, it's really going to test people, you know, from the pointy end of the race like, this is definitely where things start to shake up for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a group coming into here after Call Reserve, I wouldn't look to see a larger group coming out of here.
Can I ask, is that dissimilar from, or if you know, from the course a couple of years ago? Because I remember rolling through Eskridge and there was some chunky, narrower stuff after that, but I can't recall if it's the same that you're describing.
I think there was a piece of it on Divide. I don't know that it did the whole section of Divide.
Okay. Yeah.
And this year it's doing the whole 4.5 mile section.
Awesome. Fantastic. So after that Divide section you're talking about, so Divide is the name of the road.
Yeah, it starts as Sanford Road and then turns into Divide Road. And that's about, you know, mile 41-ish through about 45. And then it kind of settles down from there. And right in the middle of that, right around like mile 46, is where the XL makes their first split. So they'll make a right off of Divide, and they kind of, they've got a couple of loops off of the main 200 course. Mm-hmm. And this will be the first point that they get off course.
Cool. They'll get a preview the day before then, so we can follow along with them.
Right. They can call back and tell us.
Yeah.
So let's stick with the 200 course for now. Where do they go from there?
So after the Divide section, like shortly after, like right at like 49, mile 49, they get onto Recton Road, which is a minimum maintenance road. But it's also about a mile and a half long, and it's like a 3-pitch climb. So nothing, I don't think any of the pitches by themselves would deem it as hard. But you put the three of them back to back and it becomes, you know, something. So something to note anyway. And then honestly, after that, you've got the next 8 to 10 miles is pretty rolling, pretty fast, good surface. So, it, you know, some reprieve in there, but you'll probably need it.
Sounds like it, yeah.
And then after Eskridge, what's the next checkpoint? Or I guess, that's a water oasis in Eskridge. And then there's a checkpoint then coming up?
Yeah, you'll have a checkpoint at mile 70. 71, and that's an Alma at the elementary school there. You know, again, in between the two, it's mainly rolling, good surface. You do have a couple of spots in there that will rival Divide Road, a couple of roads that we've taken in the past that have been game changers. I won't go into too much detail there. You'll just need to see them when you get there, but I'm excited to see how those go as well. And then, yeah, you get into Alma. Coming out of Alma, you're back on gravel probably within about a mile. And again, it's like 8 to 10 miles of pretty fast, flowy, you know, wide roads, good surface. A couple of sections of the chunkier stuff, but nothing major. You know, no long sections. You know, and then at about mile 77, you hit Phillips Creek Road, which is about a mile long, kind of gradual, steady climb. So, you know, again, one of those things that in and of itself, you know, nothing major, but right. But at mile 77, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially after everything else you've already done, you know, with some of those other
right. Tough
ones.
Yeah. So coming out of there, the next really major section is going to be at about mile 104, and it's Little Egypt.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's, again, iconic. I think has been in almost every North course. 2.5 mile section. It's nasty. It's big, chunky. There's a nasty descent right in the middle of it.
And plenty of people walk that,
right? What more can you say about it? Yeah, I think the majority will. You know, it's super hard. I do think Divide Road is probably harder. You know, Little Egypt is no slouch for sure.
And what's also tough about Little Egypt is that you're hitting it later in the ride. You've got more cuts that are killing you, as you were saying, death by a thousand cuts in your legs by then. The day is also heating up by then, where you're hitting Divide Road probably when it might be still a little bit cooler. So things like this all start to accumulate. And that's what makes Little Egypt, I think, so iconic.
Yeah. And to be honest, you know, you've been in the headwind now for probably 35 miles. Coming out of Alma, that's when you're going to start seeing, you know, that wind in your face for the next 35 miles coming into Little Egypt. So, you know, you're not going to get much of a break before you hit that. You know, and then coming out of that, you've got shortly after that, like right at mile 113 is your second water oasis. That's Alta Vista, which is good. It comes at a good place. Come out of Little Egypt, you climb back out of there, and then you can, you know, get a little break.
Yeah, it truly is again, an oasis. Because,
you're stuck in the headwind pretty much the rest of the day. So,
and it gets a little bit more shaded back in that kind of Alta Vista area, right? If I remember that area, you kind of get a little more tree cover. It's a little more windy, maybe a little respite.
Yeah, coming through Little Egypt, you'll have some tree cover, which is really cool. And honestly, even just like coming out of Alma, I think one of the things that's kind of dynamic about the North Course, you don't have a lot of straight roads. Like there's a lot of twisty, turny roads. There's a lot of turns. I think they're pretty cool roads, honestly. It's, you know, I think that varies some from the South Course. I think it's pretty neat. There's not a lot of just long, straight slogs. Okay. You've got some dynamic roads in there.
After Alta Vista, then you're going to have one more checkpoint before you have the home stretch, so to speak. Where's that going to be?
Yeah, so that's going to come right at about mile 150 in Council Grove, also at the school. Pretty straightforward, you know, easy to get into and out of. We've been there in the past. Coming out of there, you start right away with about a half mile climb. It's good surface. Yeah. Again, at mile 150,
yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, it's harder than it should be, right? and then it's, you know, honestly, like at this point, you should be feeling pretty good. You have mostly good surface roads the rest of the way in. You are going to deal with some headwind. You know, up until about mile 170, you've got a couple of minimum maintenance road sections. Nothing that we've looked at, and even with, you know, heavy rain, nothing that's going to look like some of the South Course roads. You know, it's just a different minimum maintenance road on the north end. And then you get into mile 176, and you have the Cohola climb.
Yeah.
which, you know, 176, like that's any climb at 176 miles is hard.
Cohola
just happens to be probably the longest one of the day.
Yeah, and it's always windy there. It never seems, I don't think I've ever climbed Cohola and it was like, oh, it's just a beautiful, calm day. This is great. I mean, it's beautiful there,
no.
But it's hard.
Yeah, wind will be directly in your face. You're coming up from the lake. It's a really cool community, super supportive. So it's, you know, it's really a treat to get to go through there. And then from there, you know, you're almost back to Americas at that point where, you know, it's not an official water oasis or aid station. It was for the 25 and 50. That will kind of be torn down before anybody else gets there. But the water monsters, we try to leave in place. So it is kind of that last stitch. Like if you need water, you should have some availability there.
Great.
A water monster being these big, giant jugs of water that you have like a series of spigots around them. You can fill up your bottle.
Yeah,
there.
They hold, it's like, you know, 150 gallons of water or something.
Yeah.
And then have about, you know, 15 spigots around the whole thing, so you can fill up. I do have to mention on the course drive at mile 180, so like just before getting into Americas, there is a goat crossing, and it's not established, but we came through, and I drove with Ryan Cross, who is on the marketing team with Lifetime, and a good friend. But we get there, and one goat kind of sneaks out of the woods and is standing in the road. And, you know, we're both like, okay, stop and wait. Well, behind this goat, no kidding, 22 more. Come strolling out across the road. I mean, baby goats everywhere, just like all over the place. So I would be mindful of the goat crossing.
Got it. Well, that's actually, it brings us to one question we wanted to kind of talk about. And cattle isn't always the biggest deal on the north courses. It's not quite as open range as it is down south. But I think it's always good to just kind of talk through, you know, what are best practices when we are coming up on cattle or goats, I guess, in this situation, and just how to approach them and not, you know, overwhelm the cattle, I think, is one of the big things, so that they're not jumping into barbed wire fences and that kind of stuff. But have you talked to any of the ranchers out there and like heard from them on terms of, you know, what we can do to be better participants?
Yeah, I think it's just not startling them. You know, it's, right. I think for that moment in time, you know, we have to think about something outside of ourselves. Right. And it's right. like, don't, mm-hmm. run up on the cow and scare it and cause it to do something unnatural to itself. So, you know, and you bring up a good point with the local ranchers. You know, this is their workplace. And something that we need to keep in mind and be mindful of is, you know, we're out there for one day, you know, and we're trying to be good stewards, not only for this event, but for the industry as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really easy for a couple of people to get cycling lumped into this box of, you know, disrespectful people or something like that. And I think it's, you know, we need to be mindful of that. This is their workplace. This is their home. You know, we need to keep that in mind when we're out traveling on their roads, and they will be working. You know, it's the one thing, you know, about farming is like, it doesn't stop because it's the weekend.
Right. Right.
So, you know, we talk to all of them. They welcome us, you know, with open arms, but we also have to do our part to be good stewards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we definitely have talked about a lot of the hard places and the key places maybe that the race will separate or where people need to be heads up. But are there any particular spots on course where you're like, this is beautiful? Like, make sure you pick your head up, look around, and enjoy where you're at, because I have a feeling there's quite a few of those places out there.
There really are. And it's, unfortunately, it comes at a lot of the climbs. What I found is like, you know, you crest the top of the climb and then you're just like, you're in this beautiful spot where you can see this vast farmland that goes on for miles. So, you know, at that point, I'm usually breathing through my eyeballs and can't see. But for the rest of you, you know, when you get to the top of the climbs, like, look around. It really is. It's super pretty. It's a super unique region. Mm-hmm. So we're lucky to be able to play in such a place.
So I feel like we've covered the 200 course pretty well. What can you tell us about the XL? And actually, before we do that, maybe is there anything else we should touch on for the 100 course?
Mm-hmm. A couple of things on the 100 is, you know, we mentioned it kind of cuts off at mile 27 and cuts across. And where it comes back in is about mile 131 on the 200-mile course, which is right before Des Moines Road, which is another kind of minimum maintenance, chunky, hard section. Cool. So the 100-milers are not out of the woods. They get some of it as well. Mm-hmm. Even though they're missing Divide, they will have plenty of opportunity to get the full experience. And then they will come into Council Grove as a checkpoint as well. So that is a shared checkpoint. And then they are pretty much on the same course the whole way back in.
Okay. So they'll have the minimal maintenance roads, Kahala, And then it slowly, and for those who haven't been, the closer you get to town, the flatter the roads become. And I would, in most cases, the smoother they become. I mean, the last kind of a, there's like kind of a 20-mile radius from town that it's pretty fast. And it does get a little easier as you get closer to town until you get into town. And we can talk about the finish at the finish, but, yeah, so it kind of transitions. You know, you leave town fast and easy and it gets harder out there away from town, and then it kind of transitions back into that as you return.
Yeah, I would say even coming out of like the Cohola climb, you know, pretty much the rest of the way in, you've got good surface, wide roads, pretty fast. Nothing crazy. You know, at that point, you should be feeling very confident that you're in a good place to make it.
Yeah. So that's the 100, feeling good there. Let's talk about these crazy nutters who take on the XL. you described that their opening section is very similar to the 200. They're going to go through Call Reserve, the chunkiness there. They hit Eskridge, I think you said. And from there, what happens? Because then it's quite a bit different at that point.
It is. So they have three major sections that are different. The first one coming out of Eskridge, they'll do part of Divide Road. And then they have a pretty big loop that goes up around like Maple Hill and then comes back into the 200 course, which I think they rejoin right around like mile 114 for them on the 200. It's shortly before Alma. Mm-hmm. And then they come through the Alma checkpoint as well. And then right after that, mile 130 for them, they separate from the 200 mile course again. So they've got another loop that goes out to, I believe it's Pillsbury Crossing, kind of to the northwest of the 200 mile. Really cool roads. You know, they're getting a lot of the same terrain with, you know, sections of big chunk. But then there's a lot of like fast flowing rolling, you know, for 350 miles. I don't know if you can say death by 1,000 cuts anymore. It's more like 10,000 cuts or right. A million cuts. Or, and then, you know, they come back in and do Little Egypt and all that again, right around mile 154. They're the same through Volland. Alta Vista, they stay with the 200 all the way through Council Grove. And then shortly after Council Grove, they split off for a large loop to the south, out around like Florence and through Cottonwood Falls in that area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
And then they rejoin right before Cohola. So they will also get to experience Cohola. And then from there, they follow the same route in.
So in terms of timing, when do you think the XL riders will start overlapping with the 200 riders? You know, because for those who don't know, the XL starts, it's 3 p.m. on Friday. What I'm getting at is, and I'm not asking for a precise time or distance. It's what's cool about that experience is that when you finish an XL, a lot of times you are funneling in, you're filtering in with 100, 200 finishers as well. And it's really cool. And I guess from Cohola on, I would think that depending on how fast you are at any of these distances, you can expect to be among riders finishing different distances, which is super cool.
Yeah. And I think we're expecting, you know, some of the 350 riders to start, you know, early afternoon on Saturday, start showing up. So, you know, really, they're going to be pretty mixed in most of Saturday into Sunday morning. You know, as you know, the finish line kind of closes at 3 a.m., but I don't plan on walking away. I think there's still going to be, you know, people out there. So, you know, I think it's important for me to be there and welcome people in as they come. But yeah, I think starting early afternoon, mid-afternoon, you can start seeing the 350 kind of mixed in with everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you'll have the 100 people coming through Council Grove, you know, earlier, obviously, than the 200s are going to get to that point. So I think, you know, the XLs are for sure going to be mixing in with a lot of people that last section.
So yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about your role throughout the weekend then, because if we're honest, the staff at Lifetime, you take on your own ultra endurance weekend. Right. You know, you're not on a bike, but I know a lot of you guys on the crew, a lot of you women on the crew, there isn't a lot of sleep occurring during that time. There's not a lot of downtime. So talk us a little bit about your weekend or what you're expecting.
You know, I think for me, you're right. There's not a lot of sleep. I think I'm trying to rest now. But I think it's important to be available and accessible. You know, I think that's important with my role. It's accessible for the 25 mile all the way through the 350 mile. You know, I want to be there for everyone. So it's, you know, it's many different hats. I like to call myself the porta potty relocation specialist, because you know, that's what we end up doing a lot of. But, you know, things will happen. Fires will come up. You know, it's pretty constant. I don't know that you realize how much sleep you didn't get until, you know, Monday. You know, and then it all kind of sets in, and it's like you're riding the high of everything through the weekend, and then you crash. So,
right, yeah, exactly. It's kind of like doing the race, right? You know, you rest into it, you get as much sleep as you can, you try and go in as fresh as you can, and then you just, yeah, you're blown by the end of it.
Yeah, it's really similar. You know, emotionally, physically, all of it. It gets pretty taxing, but you know, at the end of the day, similar to riding it, you know, there's a huge high there. It's seeing everyone cross the finish line from that, you know, again, back to like the 25 mile that, you know, they didn't know they could finish the 25 mile, seeing them cross the line and the joy, that's huge.
Yeah.
Like being able to see that on their face. And then, you know, the 350 milers, like I can't even fathom.
Yeah.
You know, riding my bike for 350 miles. So, you know, just seeing that accomplishment on their faces, like that makes it all, it makes it super worth it. So,
yeah, there's nothing like the finish line of Unbound. So definitely, you know, just got to keep your eyes focused on that. If, you know, the hard sections of the course, just know that it's a special place coming up. But well, speaking about the finish line or the finish shoot, I know there's potentially some changes coming into town this year. You know, last question on the course, can you talk us through what to expect, you know, once we kind of get back into town, into campus area, and what might be different this year?
Yeah, so really coming out of, you know, we come through the tunnel and onto Highland. And that is at about, oh God, a mile to the finish, maybe.
Right.
So starting there, we've kind of started stickers on the road where, you know, at some point throughout the day, we will have that separated. So for a sprint finish for the elite fields, we're going to try to clear the finish chute. So we will have a separation starting kind of there. But what you will notice, everyone will notice, is once you get to the top of Highland, pretty much at 12, we start with a hard closure. So the last almost half mile of the course is within a full hard closed roads. We start our barricade at 12th and Commercial. So completely protected. I think you have to mention the Highland Street climb. You know, I would love to see more of a party atmosphere there because, again, like that late in the day, it's like, really? We have to go up this too?
Yep.
But yeah, it's so once you get to 12th and Commercial, you're looking at a hard closure all the way in, which is new for this year. So I think that's huge. Almost a half mile of closed course.
Well, and as we learned, I think at Unbound Camp, we also don't turn off of Highland into campus. We continue straight to 12th. So it's a little less technical in a way. It's bigger roads. You're not on kind of a sidewalk bike path, which is going to be a change for a lot of people. I think a lot of people might just naturally turn right off of Highland if they're not paying attention. So that's a change as well.
Yeah, we actually stay on Highland to 12th. We'll make a right on 12th and then a left on Commercial. So we don't cut through the campus this year. But all of that is hard closed.
So, and then the finish chute itself, is my understanding is it's a little bit wider than in years past, and is and talk about that elite finish. Like, so if you're finishing your 100, let's say, you're very excited, but the 200 elite racers, men or women, have started to catch you or are catching you at the line. What's that experience going to be like for, in particular, for the 100 finisher? Is where my concern kind of lies.
So really, it's starting back at 12. So not only are we hard fenced on the perimeter edges, we will also have a center line. So as we get closer to the expected elite finishes of the men and women, we'll start pushing all distances to the right side of that finish chute, and then they will filter all the way down, protected on their own side. The elite finishes would then be filtered to the left side. You know, there's no potential overlap or interference on either side. And then once, you know, again, once those finishes are in, once we have the clean finish, protected fields, we open that back up and it's just one huge, you know, 30-foot wide finish chute. So we don't anticipate that impacting many people. It's safer for both parties involved.
Yes. Yes.
So it was something that was important to us this year. To make that change and make sure that we could protect both fields, you know, the 100 milers, the 25 milers, and the elite finishes as well.
Okay, amazing. So we've talked through the courses, we've talked all the way through the finish, we've talked checkpoints, we've talked sneaky hard roads. I think it's actually, we kind of messed up the order here. We didn't talk about starts in particular, because another change, especially for the amateur field, is their start is a little bit later. And I know there's been a lot of, there's been some questions around that. So could you talk us through the men's elite start of the, and I'm talking the 200 here in particular, the men's elite start, the women's elite start, and so on.
Yeah, we have the men's elite goes at 6 a.m. Women's at 6:05. And then we wanted to build in some more time there to try to, you know, eliminate the overlap for as long as possible. So the age group or the rest of the 200 milers will start at 6:30, under a, you know, it's a mile and a half, escort to the first left-hand turn onto gravel. So, there has been some feedback, and I know, you know, some people are concerned with the race, the sun aspect of it. It, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of the nature of the event. So, you know, we feel like it's the best decision at the time, you know, to try to separate that a little bit, give some more space at the front. It's not a ton of time. So we're hoping that it doesn't play, you know, a huge role for the majority of the age group athletes.
Well, and I have it on good authority that Lifetime actually petitioned to get Sunset moved back 25 minutes, but were unsuccessful in that bid. So,
yeah. So I filed a permit try to get Sunset moved back. You know, and I don't have an official no yet, but it doesn't look good.
But I do think it's a good heads up. You know, if you're trying to race the sun, you're going to have to be a little more efficient with your stoppage, things like that. You can make the difference. You can make it up. But yeah, I think it's
I think it's doable.
Absolutely.
I don't think that it's changing the game completely, but it is something to be mindful of.
So Sean, are there any other course notes that you'd like to share with our audience? We've asked you some pointed questions, but is there anything else that stands out for you? And if not, we can help you transition out of course talk into some other fun things.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is, nothing in particular on course. I think I want you to show up and again, kind of create your own journey and experience it for the first time without any preconceived ideas. And You know, I think we've talked about a lot of the, especially the safety aspects of it. And we will have some signs for, you know, the technical steep descents that I want you to know about ahead of time. But I really think coming into it with an open mind and being ready to, you know, experience what Kansas has to offer and the magic of the Flint Hills.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for all the work you've put into that. Moving on, there's something kind of silly we do on every episode. We call it the random question generator. So, Kristen, if you could fire up the random question generator.
All right. Beep, boop, beep, 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 beep.
All right. There it is, everyone. That's technology at its finest. Here's your question, Sean. Do you ever sing when you're alone? And if so, what songs come to mind?
Oh, man. I do. So I am a fan of, I will sing conversations.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, it's like keeping the mood light. You know, you can't be frustrated if you're singing. So even among coworkers, like if I am having a conversation, I have been known to sing the conversation to them.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's probably about it.
Nice. That's great.
I love it. That's really great. Awesome, Sean. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us. This has been really illuminating. I think our audience will just eat up all this information. We really look forward to seeing you in Emporia in a few weeks' time. We'll be there early, so maybe we can catch up for a coffee or something, or definitely post-race Bloody Marys or a brunch if you like. We have a standing reservation at Union Street, so we'd love to see you there if you're not, you know, sleeping. Yeah, thanks for being on the show, Sean.
You got lots of time to sleep.
Right on. Well, that's it for us today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next time.